Hi everyone, and welcome back to the 37th video for the Old Testament Survey course. In this section, we'll examine the prophetic book of Ezekiel. Now, in some ways, Ezekiel is a typical prophetic book, but in other ways, it is strange, with fantastic visions and symbolism. But first, some background information. The author is Ezekiel, who is from a priestly family, and he was deported with the first round of exiles in around 597 BC. Now, this is before Jerusalem was finally captured and destroyed. So he was a priest, but with no opportunity to act as a priest in the temple. So he acted as a leader, ministering to the exiled community. And Ezekiel was ministering about the same time as Jeremiah, the time just before and just after the exile. Jeremiah spoke about the exile from Jerusalem as it was happening, but Ezekiel spoke about the exile from Babylon, the territory of Babylon, not the city of itself. Now, in terms of the organization of Ezekiel, like Jeremiah, it is a series of oracles given to different situations. Now, many of Ezekiel's oracles, they're specifically dated, but they're not all in chronological order throughout the book. They seem to be organized by topic. But the big picture organization is based on chronological relationship to a key event. In other words, the first major division of Ezekiel is the oracles delivered before the fall of Jerusalem. And this section is divided into smaller subsections. First is Ezekiel's call and his commission to prophetic ministry. He had vision of the great God who is still God, even in the territory of Babylon. Second is a series of prophecies against Judah and Jerusalem. This section has many acted out prophetic parables where Ezekiel somehow dramatized the message he was given. And in this subsection, Ezekiel narrates how God's glory departs from the temple. This is the reverse of God's glory entering the tabernacle in Moses' time and entering the temple in Solomon's time, as we've already seen. And therefore, it's a heartbreaking, tragic story that God's presence is leaving his people because of their sin. And there are various parables and actions symbolizing and explaining the exile. This is the same kind of thing that we saw in Isaiah and Jeremiah, that there's a series of prophecies against the surrounding nations. Then the second major division is the oracles delivered after the fall of Jerusalem. And this section is also divided into two smaller portions. The focus of the first is preparation. Ezekiel is given the commission to be a watchman, warning the wicked of their impending destruction as he sees it coming. Then the fall of Jerusalem is announced and explained. And then God calls out the shepherds of his people, the leaders of his people, and he promises a good shepherd like King David, who will rule rightly and justly. And then there's a great promise of return, revival, and restoration. And this includes the vision of a valley full of dry bones that comes back to life. And then the nations are judged. And the focus of the second subsection is restoration. Ezekiel narrates a vision of the glory of God returning to a new temple. And then he speaks of new division of the land, similar to what happened in Joshua's time. And then he describes a new heavenly city, described in symbolic terms. Thus, the book of Ezekiel, it ends with a hope for cosmic renewal and of Yahweh dwelling with his people in scrub. Now, let's survey the content of Ezekiel by looking at a few key verses. First is chapter 3, verses 16 through 21, which says, "At the end of 7 days, the word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. So hear the word I speak, and give them warning from me. When I say to a wicked man, you will surely die, and you do not warn him or speak out to dissuade him from his evil ways in order to save his life, that wicked man will die for his sin, and I will hold you accountable for his blood. But if you do warn the wicked man, and he does not turn from his wickedness or from his evil ways, he will die for his sin, but you will have saved yourself. Again, when a righteous man turns from his righteousness and does evil, and I put a stumbling block before him, he will die. Since you did not warn him, he will die for his sin. The righteous things he did will not be remembered, and I will hold you accountable for his blood. But if you do warn the righteous man not to sin, and he does not sin, he will surely live because he took warning, and you will have saved yourself. This passage is the first of Ezekiel's calls to be a watchman, warning the wicked of their coming punishment. Now, it's completely up to the wicked whether they will repent and avoid destruction or not. Each individual determines their own destiny. So Ezekiel cannot be blamed for their own sin, but Ezekiel will be held accountable if he does not speak and try to dissuade them. Being silent in the face of wickedness really does no one any favors, and it's often the worst thing that could be done. Then the next few key verses come from the section where Ezekiel is taken in a vision to see God's glory departing from the temple. And God departs in stages, spread out over a few chapters. Chapter 8, verse 12 says, "He said to me, 'Son of man, have you seen what the elders of the house of Israel are doing in the darkness, each at the shrine of his own idol? They say, the Lord does not see us. The Lord has forsaken the land.'" So this section of the glory departing starts with Ezekiel's observing the evil that is done by the Jerusalem leaders. In order to prove that the conquest and God's glory departing, this is just and it's deserved. They think that Yahweh does not see or does not care, and therefore they act as if God does not exist. And then Ezekiel narrates the glory of God leaves his place in the inner room of the temple and goes as far as the doorway of the temple. And then, chapter 9, verses 5 through 10, God is speaking to angels. Then God said to them, "Defile the temple and fill the courts with the slain. Go." So they went out and began killing throughout the city. While they were killing and I was left alone, I fell face down, crying out, "Oh, sovereign Lord, are you going to destroy the entire remnant of Israel in this outpouring of your wrath on Jerusalem?" He answered me, "The sin of the house of Israel and Judah is exceedingly great. The land is full of bloodshed, and the city is full of injustice. They say, 'Yahweh has forsaken the land. Yahweh does not see.' So I will not look on them with pity or spare them, but I will bring down on their own heads what they have done." See, this passage pronounces horrible judgment on Jerusalem for their sins. The temple, which had enjoyed the presence of God, would be defiled by their dead bodies. And God speaks justice. They rejected God, so he rejected them. And the very things that they had done will be done to them. And then the glory moves out of the temple, as is told in chapter 10, verse 18. It says, "Then the glory of the Lord departed from over the threshold of the temple and stopped above the cherubim." Then we see a brief interlude. In the middle of God's glory leaving, God promises his glory would return. And he promised the return of Scrub. And we see this, in chapter 11, verses 16 through 20. God says, "Therefore say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Although I sent them far away among the nations and scattered them among the countries, yet for a little while I have been a sanctuary for them in the countries where they have gone. Therefore say, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. I will gather you from the nations and bring you back from the countries where you've been scattered, and I will give you back the land of Israel again. They will return to it and remove all its vile images and detestable idols. I will give them an undivided heart and put a new spirit in them. I will remove from them their heart of stone and give them a heart of flesh. Then they will follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. They will be my people, and I will be their God. Now notice the promise of return to the land, and also the promise of a new heart and a new spirit, so that the people don't just fall into the same old idolatry and continue this pattern of Israel's history. And also notice the promise that they will be my people and I will be their God. And then we see in Ezekiel the next move as God's glory leaves the city entirely, as is narrated in chapter 11, verses 22 and 23. It says, then the cherubim, with the wheels beside them, spread their wings, and the glory of the God of Israel was above them. The glory of the Lord went up from within the city and stopped above the mountain east of it. So God's glory is no longer in Jerusalem. But he's promised in the meantime to be a sanctuary to his people wherever they've been scattered. Then the next key verse is chapter 18, verses 29 through 32. It says, therefore, O house of Israel, I will judge you, each one according to his ways, declares the Sovereign Lord. Repent, turn away from all your offenses, then sin will not be your downfall. Rid yourselves of all the offenses you've committed and get a new heart and a new spirit. Why will you die, O house of Israel? For I take no pleasure in the death of anyone, declares the Sovereign Lord. Repent and live. You heard, this passage clearly warns of judgment, but it also shows God's compassion, that God does not want to judge. He would rather that people would repent. And notice the promise that if they do so, he would give them a new heart and a new spirit. And then chapter 33, verses 7 through 12 says, son of man, I've made you a watchman for the house of Israel. So hear the word I speak and give them warning from me. When I say to the wicked, O wicked man, you will surely die, and you do not speak out to dissuade him from his ways, that wicked man will die for his sin, and I will hold you accountable for his blood. But if you do warn the wicked man to turn from his ways, and he does not do so, he will die for his sin, but you will have saved yourself. Son of man, say to the house of Israel, this is what you are saying. Our offenses and sins weigh us down, and we are wasting away because of them. How then can we live? Say to them, as surely as I live, declares the Sovereign Lord, I take no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but rather that they turn from their ways and live. Turn from your evil ways. Why will you die, O house of Israel? Therefore, son of man, say to your countrymen, the righteousness of the righteous man will not save him when he disobeys, and the wickedness of the wicked man will not cause him to fall when he turns from it. The righteous man, if he sins, will not be allowed to live because of his former righteousness. See, this is the second of Ezekiel's watchman calls, and it also emphasizes God's desire that the wicked would repent and live. And it also emphasizes that each person will be judged on their righteousness or their wickedness. And then chapter 34, verses 23 through 25. And this says, I will place over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he will tend them. He will tend them and be their shepherd. I, Yahweh, will be their God, and my servant David will be prince among them. I, Yahweh, have spoken. I will make a covenant of peace with them and rid the land of wild beasts so that they will live in the desert and sleep in the forests in safety. See, this is God's promise of a good shepherd who is like David, but even greater than David. And Yahweh will be their God, and he will bring blessing and scrub. And now it's chapter 36, verses 16 through 38. I'm going to start with verse 22. Therefore, say to the house of Israel, this is what the sovereign Lord says. It is not for your sake, O house of Israel, that I'm going to do these things, but for the sake of my holy name, which you have profaned among the nations where you have gone. I will show the holiness of my great name, which has been profaned among the nations, the name you have profaned among them. Then the nations will know that I am Yahweh, declares the sovereign Lord, when I show myself holy through you before their eyes. For I will take you out of the nations. I will gather you from all the countries and bring you back into your own land. I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. You will live in the land I gave your forefathers. You will be my people, and I will be your God. Then the nations around you that remain will know that I, Yahweh, have rebuilt what was destroyed and have replanted what was desolate. I, Yahweh, have spoken, and I will do it. Then they will know that I am Yahweh. This is a very important passage because it describes the promise for the restoration. Now, the first thing that God says is that it is for his name and his reputation so that the nations may know that I am Yahweh. He's doing this in New Testament terms so that his name will be hallowed. Hopefully that sounds familiar. But let me explicate this by saying, Jesus patterned the Lord's Prayer after this larger passage in Ezekiel chapter 36. If you read through carefully, compare it with the Lord's Prayer, you'll see how it matches up. In other words, this is what it looks like when God answers the prayer, hallowed be your name. And then all the rest of the prayers are there if you take the time to look. But I also want to point out, he promises he will cleanse his people from their sin, which includes a promise for a new heart and a new spirit. And the promises is that they would be his people and he would be their God and that all the nations would know that he is Yahweh. Then the next key verse is chapter 37, verses 1 through 6. And it says, the hand of the Lord was upon me, and he brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord and set me in the middle of a valley. It was full of bones. He led me back and forth among them, and I saw a great many bones on the floor of the valley, bones that were very dry. He asked me, son of man, can these bones live? I said, O sovereign Lord, you alone know. Then he said to me, prophesy to these bones and say to them, dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says to these bones. I will make breath enter you, and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you and make flesh come upon you and cover you with skin. I will put breath in you and you will come to life. Then you will know that I am Yahweh. Now this passage is the famous vision of the dry bones. Now this is not literally about a bunch of skeletons coming to life, but is symbolic for God's people. Judah looked as dead as a pile of bones with no hope of ever living again. But God has decreed that the nation will come back to life and will come back to the land. And it will happen by God's action, because dry bones have no life to give themselves life. Judah cannot do it for himself, but God can, and God will do it. And when it happens, they will know that I am Yahweh. And then the next key verse promises the return of God's glory to the land and to a rebuilt temple, the opposite of God's glory leaving the temple that we saw earlier. And we see this in chapter 43, verses 1 through 7. It says, "Then the man brought me to the gate facing east, and I saw the glory of the God of Israel coming from the east. His voice was like the roar of rushing waters, and the land was radiant with his glory. The vision I saw was like the vision I had seen when he came to destroy the city, and like the visions I had seen by the Kebar River, and I fell face down. The glory of the Lord entered the temple through the gate facing east. Then the Spirit lifted me up and brought me into the inner court, and the glory of the Lord filled the temple. While the man was standing beside me, I heard someone speaking to me from inside the temple. He said, 'Son of man, this is the place of my throne and the place for the soles of my feet. This is where I will live among the Israelites forever. The house of Israel will never again defile my holy name, neither they nor their kings by their prostitution and the lifeless idols of their kings at their high places.'" See, the glory of the Lord filled the temple in Ezekiel's vision of the future, as he did in the tabernacle and the temple. So Ezekiel says he's going to do it again. Now think about, when was this fulfilled? If you'll remember from the book of Ezra, we're not told that this happened when the temple was rebuilt in Ezra. It just doesn't mention it. And actually, this doesn't happen until the New Testament. Think about, when did God's glory come down with a cloud of fire to fill his temple? Yep, you guessed it. In Acts chapter 2, when God's Spirit came down as tongues of fire and filled his people at Pentecost. That means that the New Testament church is God's new people, and the temple where he dwells is no longer a physical building, but it is his people. But we're way ahead of the story. Ezekiel, at his time, is just promising it will happen as part of God's restoration of his people. And that brings us to the last key verse, which is chapter 48, verse 35. And that's the last verse of the book, at the end of all the promises of restoration. And it includes a symbolic description of a new city. And at the end, this verse says, "And the name of the city from that time on will be The Lord Is There." You see, the title of the city emphasizes God's present, which is the height of the promised blessing. So now, let's examine the theological themes of Ezekiel. The first is idolatry. Ezekiel consistently rebukes the nation for their idolatry and how offensive it is to the great God. And the second theme is personal responsibility. We've seen each person determines their own destiny. If they're punished, it will be for their own sin. Not for their parents, not for their leaders, not for their nation's sin. They will die for their own sin. But the opposite is also true. If anyone turns from their sin, they will live, no matter what the rest of the nation is doing. Everyone must take personal responsibility for themselves. You cannot live off your parents' faith. God has no grandchildren. The third theme is God's presence and his glory. And I hope you've already noticed this theme developed in the key verses, that the presence of God's glory with his people is the greatest of blessings, and his absence when he leaves is the greatest of punishments. and the hope of his presence returning to his people. And the next theme is restoration. And we've talked about how a large part of Ezekiel's later prophecies promise and describe God's restoration of his people back to the land. But not just going back to the land, but experiencing renewed life and renewed relationship with God and renewed experience of God's glory and his presence. And this new life is characterized by the fifth theme, which is a new heart and a new spirit. Multiple times in this book, God promises to change his people on the inside so that they love and obey him from the heart, so that their relationship with God would be about inward motivations more than just outward actions that you could fake without believing and having your heart in it. Now, the inward motivations always do result in outward actions, but God promises he would work from the inside out. And this promise is actually the same as we saw Jeremiah give in the promise of the new covenant. And these are the kind of things that Jesus talks about changing a heart being more important than having outward actions, but having a black heart in the middle. Okay, these are the themes of Ezekiel. We see God's hatred of idolatry and punishment of sin. They're very real in the book of Ezekiel. But God's restoring grace is a greater reality. God always has the last word of grace and restoration, even in the middle of punishment. So now, let's review. First is the organization of Ezekiel. And there are two main sections, which are before the fall of Jerusalem and after the fall of Jerusalem. And I hope that's easy to remember and hang that on. And then let's review the themes of Ezekiel. They are idolatry, personal responsibility, God's presence and glory, restoration, and new heart and new spirit. Now, if you'd like a memory aid to help remember the themes of Ezekiel, I.P. Green, which is probably way too much personal information. I apologize. Okay, that's our summary of the book of Ezekiel. As usual, there's much more here for you to explore on your own, but I hope we've covered the main points and have given you a framework to understand, to remember, and explore further. Now, in the next section, we'll complete the major prophets by looking at the book of Daniel. And I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for watching.